The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Okay, this is Tony Kornheiser. And you know how I always say that we're live from Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, about a block and a half inside the line that demarks Maryland from the District of Columbia, because we're in the District of Columbia, the capital of the United States of America. Well, that's mostly true, except that although we are live when we say this, this isn't a regular show. This is pre-recorded. It's at Chatter, but it's not even breakfast time. It's 6 o'clock in the evening, and there's no Chris, and there's no Gary, and there's no Jeannie, no Tori, no Liz, no anybody except Nigel and me. Right? Say hello.
That's right. I'm here as well.
That's all we've got. So let me go over the schedule so you understand what we're doing. This is the summertime. We're not going to leave you high and dry. I certainly can't do that because Arthur Mason, who I saw today at Columbia, said, "Where have you been? I listen every single day." And I said, "Arthur, it's a summer. We're not going to be on every single day." But in an endeavor to give you a little bit more than we usually do, this is how the schedule is going to work. They're going to be full shows mainly on Mondays. That's not right. Every single week, but we will have full shows. We will have the regulars in, and we'll do the normal thing that we do. But we're also going to have pop-up interview shows. This is an example of a pop-up interview show, and I will get to the details of it in a second. But first, we're going to give something away because it says in the spot, this episode featuring Adam Carolla is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So there's going to be no excitement then when I tell you it's Adam Carolla because I just gave that away. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? And it tells me to talk about the challenge of finding great talent and or the importance of finding great talent to a successful business. I have two businesses. I have a podcast that makes no money and a restaurant that loses money. So you don't really need me to tell you about finding talent. And we don't have any talent. That's why if you need talent, you go to ZipRecruiter. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours, which I could use because, again, I'm losing money in two business ventures. Well, I'm not making money in one, losing one in another. There's no juggling emails or calls to your office, which is good. I have no office. You simply screen and rate and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. And dashboard's probably a code word for something that pops up onto your screen, right? Do you know what a dashboard is?
Assuming it's on a car. I don't think so,
because I don't think ZipRecruiter is actually on wheels.
Probably not.
So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes, even small businesses, to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners to this high-quality podcast, pop-up show, can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony, ZipRecruiter. That's a complicated word, recruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. Okay, so we've done that, and I want to get back to the notion of what we're going to do in the summer. This is something we've done with Adam Carolla. Adam Carolla is the number one podcaster in the United States of America. He's it. I first heard of Adam Carolla through his book, In 50 Years, We'll All Be Chicks. I just thought it was such a great title that I got the book, and I got the book read to me by Adam Carolla, which you will hear as we go through this podcast. What we're going to do, hopefully, along with an Adam Carolla podcast, and these are going to be from about 30 minutes to 45 minutes, unless we really get carried away. I obviously want to get Ron Darling, who has agreed to do this, even though it didn't work out last week when I said it would. Bill Simmons said to me the other day, "Well, why don't you put me on the podcast?" And I said, "Well, because it's really early in the morning." And he said, "Well, why don't you tape it in the evening?" And I said, "You know, that's a good idea,
probably
Billy.
Do that.
That's a good idea." So we'll do some time with Billy. And Greg Garcia, who has a new television show called The Guest Book, and he's got the Jimmy Buffett musical going to Broadway in the fall. I mean, he's as hot as you can be. And Garcia is going to come on, and we'll just talk to Garcia. We'll have Garcia insult everybody that we have ever met. So this one is with Adam Carolla. I met him a couple of times. You will hear all of that. So here is our conversation.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This very lovely music comes from Brandon S. Bowker in Lexington, Kentucky. This is called Bloom. It's from his most recent album called Treehouse. Adam Carolla joins us. He's got a podcast. Do you have people who send you in music? We have people who send us in original music, and we play it because I didn't want to spend $14 billion on getting rights from ASCAP and things like that. Do you do anything like that, Adam?
We have a music group that, a publishing company that, the clearance company, is like a big fan of ours.
Yeah.
So they provide us with all this stuff. So,
fantastic.
No, but I feel your pain.
Fantastic on that. So that was an unbelievable dry opening, and Carolla probably's thinking, is this it? Is this the way he comes in? So I'm going to do a long introduction now that you will, I hope, will enjoy. When we do the PTI show, we're in the newsroom around, not Wilbon, he's late, but I'm there around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And because the same people produce the Levitard show and the Around the Horn show, I get to watch the Levitard show all the time. Now, Levitard, most times he has guests, he has rappers like 6 Chainz and 8 Chainz and, 14 Chainz,
right.
Stuff like that. And I go, this is Levitard loves rappers. And that's fine, but I'm not as interested in that. So Levitard has a guest, and I hear a voice, and it doesn't sound like a rapper, and I look up, and I went, whoa, that's Adam Carolla. I know him. I've met him. This is the good part where I drop names. Jimmy Kimmel's Super Bowl party. I know Adam Carolla. So I was very interested, for the first time in anybody Levitard had on, how did you get to him? How did that happen?
Well, first off, I didn't go by Adam Carolla. I went by my white rap name, Man A's, which is with a C. Greatest name. And also, I hail from the Pennsylvania area, so I used to go by Snow Chain. So based on that, Dan, I have no idea. Somebody's publicist. I don't know. I was sitting in a studio in Burbank across from the airport. Talking to Levitard and his crazy dad.
Yeah. So what Poppy usually says, and Dan will say, just hold on for a second because we want to get Poppy to ask you a question. And Poppy will usually ask something like, Adam, what was your first date like? And you go, because it's so random, Poppy's questions, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. He asked me plantains or banana. I didn't have an answer ready.
Yeah, why would you prep for that? I mean, you wouldn't do that.
I would not prep for that. But why would I prep for a discussion about clearing music before your show?
Well, there you go.
Same thing.
There you go. All right, so I know you want to talk about the campus project. I would love to talk about that. The website is nosafespaces.com. It's do I understand this correctly? It is a documentary in progress, and the goal of which is?
The goal of which is to create a really good film. It'll be not quite a documentary. It'll be half film and half documentary. And then we'll get the message out to people who want to see it.
And the essence of the message is what?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was my opportunity to give the essence of the message.
But it's okay. This is podcast land, so we can just go back. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, it's the land of mulligans when it comes to answering questions. Dennis Prager and I. Dennis is a friend of mine. He's a very conservative, very Jewish, very serious man with a good sense of humor. And I'm an atheist who doesn't care. But we both were sort of vexed and upset about what's going on college campuses these days, vis-a-vis free speech. So we thought we'd make a movie about it.
There is, and it alternates in America, tyranny of the left and tyranny of the right. And, and sometimes you get in the middle at some place. But I understand what you're talking about because you see the headlines all the time. So-and-so banned from speaking at this place, right? I mean, the notion of we're not going to have that on this campus. Now, 50 years ago, I did some of that myself, so I figure that is germane to college campuses. But if you ask me now, as an adult, as really an old person, I would probably say you got to make them safe for everybody, don't you think? You got to.
I got to say, I got a story when I was doing my podcast earlier today which is out of, I think it's University of Arizona, where they're going to pay students $10 for each time they turn in a fellow student because they were saying something that could have been hurtful.
Whoa.
And
whoa.
I know. Whoa. Now it's gone Orwellian.
No, that's
point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, well, that's not good. That's not good. It's an easy way to make money, but it doesn't mean that it's real. And it's very scary. It's very scary in terms of intellectual freedom. It's very scary, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought this was the place of free exchange of ideas, not looking over your shoulder and people taking your, you know, words and turning them in. Like, you know, when Nutria ran wild in Louisiana, I think they offered like $1 a dead Nutria and you'd turn it in and make your living that way. You guys should Google that. It's a crazy story about giant rats that got moved by the Tabasco company there a million years ago. I digress. The point is, do we want other students ratting out their fellow students and getting paid for it?
No.
And then once you get paid for it, it's sort of like why jailhouse snitches aren't great, because if you offer them rewards, they magically come up with stories. But I was thinking to myself, snitches used to get stitches, and now snitches are going to get riches.
Yeah, I like that.
Maybe I am a rapper.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Snow Chain, I really like that. So I should tell people, I mean the dozens who are listening to this, that we have Kimmel and Bill Simmons in common. And you're more friendly with them than I am because you are in California. But Simmons is, of course, a good buddy. We have something else in common. I don't know if I got to say this to you. I suspect I did not. One of the great editors in my life was Shelby Coffey. And I understand, if I'm not mistaken, you taught Shelby and his boy Charles how to box. And Shelby was my first editor at the Washington Post in the style section, then went on to the LA Times. I'm correct in this, right, Adam?
Yes, you're 100%. Nobody brings that up or makes that connection, but I owe Shelby a real grit of attitude. I should say attitude because this guy was practically my dad. When I was teaching boxing, I was in Pasadena. He moved out to be the editor in chief of the Times, the Los Angeles Times. And he took my morning boxing, my 6:30 morning boxing class on his way into the Times every day. And we became friends. And then I started doing personal one-on-one training with him and Charles, his son. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, we'd be eating lunch on Saturdays. And I'd be over at his house watching the Holyfield Bow fight, you know. And he taught me a lot. And the main thing he taught me is that successful people weren't all that different than me, who was wildly unsuccessful. And the next thing you know, they needed a boxing trainer for a morning show boxing stunt. And the fellas in the boxing stunt, one was named Michael the Maintenance Man, and the other was named Jimmy the Sports Guy. And we can all guess which Jimmy that turned out to be.
Sure, sure. No, I mean, it is, look, when everybody writes their autobiography, there is the one amazing turn that happens where you never saw it coming and you're very grateful. I remember reading your book, and I know I told you this, or I would more accurately say having your book read to me because I got books on tape. You were an all-city football player. I mean, you were a big-time athlete, right, in L.A.? You were a big-time athlete.
I wouldn't say big time, but I was an all city football player in Los Angeles, but I didn't go anywhere after that. I just went clean carpets and then I dug ditches. So I didn't really parlay it into anything, but I was a pretty good boxer and I was able to parlay the boxing into meeting Shelby Coffey. Shelby Coffey, he's a great guy. I stay in touch with him as best I can.
No, I see him. I mean, he runs the museum in D.C. And, I mean, I've known Shelby and his wife Mary Lee forever and ever and ever because he was my first editor in the style section. I revere him. He's the only person I've ever known from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I love him. And so I know we had that connection in common. And I heard you tell Levitard that you were a terrible student and you had all these sort of jobs that appeared to be dead end or no end jobs, but you must have always been funny because your podcast is the number one thing in the country. You must have always been funny, no?
I did, but I always kind of tell people it'd be like having a gasoline refinery 10 years before the internal combustion engine was invented.
Yeah.
There was nothing to do with it. It's like, you're funny, great. Now pick the shovel up and get back to digging. That's all my entire life. My parents didn't care. The school teachers wanted me to shut up and sit down. Yeah. And that was about, and when I got on a construction site, what kind of currency is funny on a construction site in L.A., every construction site is the exact same. It's 15 Mexicans and 3 racists named Mike.
So, yeah, but see, this is how this stuff works. Like, yeah, you're funny, but in your head you say, I'm funny, but I'm funny for a construction worker. It doesn't make me Johnny Carson. Where am I going with it? On the other hand, look what happened. So was there one single, well, I guess the single break is Kimmel, right?
Well, the single break was, you know, 1,000 little pieces in a sort of mosaic of breaks. But when I've never really thought about this, but it's sort of that thing of like everybody's career, you can go, well, there's not a big break. And, you know, unless you win, unless you win America's Got Talent, yeah, or something like that. But even that would be a whole bunch of work up until that point. It's like a sort of mosaic that you put your face against. And you see all the little pieces, and when you step back 20 paces, you see a big picture of Jimmy Kimmel. But as you get closer, he literally commissioned this mosaic for me. But as you get closer, you will see all the little pieces. Meeting Shelby Coffey was a big deal for me because he made me sort of believe in myself, and he gave me a lot of confidence. And all the training I did at the Groundlings and improv and Acme Theater and all the stand-up I did and all the stuff I did before I met Jimmy. Of course, if I hadn't done all that before I met Jimmy, I don't know how the big break would have gone with Jimmy.
I guess I wonder how you get to that point. For example, you're in construction, you're digging ditches, whatever. You can build stuff with your hands. I envy people that can build stuff with their hands. I can barely put gas in my car. To me, if you can build stuff with your hands, that's a great thing. You can do that. You have that gift. But at what point do you say, yeah, I can do this. I have no particular regard for it. I long to be this other person. How do you bring yourself to try to be that other person?
Well, I had a moment, and, you know, you called it a gift, but it's not really a gift. I'm not handy. I was a journeyman carpenter. Like, I know the layout when it comes to framing. I know that the, you know, king studs are 16 on center. I know what trimmers and jack studs are. I know what headers are. I know what glue lamb beams are. I did this for a living, and it was never like, well, the guys, I think lay people think, oh, that guy's good with his hands. You have to learn all the codes and the layout and the nailing schedules and all the stuff. So it's just, I ended up just learning all that stuff on the job. And then I sort of became good with my hands. I was like 22 and I was just living in an apartment, a one bedroom apartment with no air conditioning and 2 other dudes. And I didn't like going to construction sites and cleaning up garbage. I wanted to sit in a room and write jokes and punch up scripts or, you know, anything. And I just really said to myself, look, you're 22. You're good with your hands. You know how to build. You can make a living doing that. Not a good living. I don't know if you're ever going to own a house or have dental insurance, but it's nomadic. You just go from job to job to job, and then it rains and you don't go to work because it's raining and you guys are framing and you can't frame that day. So I said, look, you're good with your hands and you have a good sense of humor. Those are your two qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a horrible student and you can't read, you can't spell, you can't write, but you can talk and you're good at building. Well, you're already building and you're miserable. Let's see if you can figure out a way to make a living talking or writing or using your mind or using your sense of humor and something that's not involving swinging a framing hammer. So I said, okay, you're 21, 22 years of age. How about I give you until you're 30? Don't put the pressure on. You have almost a decade. You've got to be doing something by the time you're 30. Who cares what you're doing at 27, 26, whatever, you're a kid. By the time you're 30, let's see if you can start getting paid, not as a TV personality or syndicated radio host or anything, just to write funny greeting cards, anything. So I said, okay. And I talked to someone about taking a Groundlings class. She said, you should take a class over at the Groundlings and learn improv. I said, I'm in.
Yeah.
I didn't have the money. You know, the classes were like $350. I didn't have car insurance, but I cobbled it together. And I started taking classes, and then I took more classes, and then I did open mics, and then I wrote down, I kept a notebook, and I wrote jokes. I taught comedy traffic school. I did everything I could possibly do, and by the time I was turning 30, I didn't have anything to show for it. I had no money. I made no headway. And 2 weeks before my 30th birthday, I met Jimmy Kimmel, and once I met Jimmy Kimmel, I said, all right, that's it. Now you're going. And I never looked back.
That's a great story. I mean, because it reminds me of I did a million sports columns, and I remember very, very few. One I remember was this. I went to the All-Star game in Indianapolis, the NBA All-Star game in 1983. And I asked all the players, if you weren't in the NBA, what would you be? And Isaiah Thomas, who was like 22 or 23 years old at that time, said he would be a senator. Which is why I never talked to Isaiah Thomas again. It's just so stupid. But the smartest guy in the room was Julius Erving. And Magic Johnson. Because Magic Johnson said something like, I'd be working on the line at GM. And Julius Erving, who's from Long Island, where I am from, said, I'd be working on the line at Grumman. And it was the recognition that, you know, not everything is just given to you. That there's luck, there's providence, there's whatever you want to call it. You have to have talent. When they throw it, you have to catch it. But not everybody, right, Adam, not everybody gets the chance to catch it. Not everybody.
It's kind of a debate that I've had with people in the past. And they say, well, come on, luck is a big deal. Luck's a big factor. And I say, well, yeah, I mean, it is to the point that none of us have been backed over by a diesel truck. And I mean, there's many different ways to sort of distill this. Being born in this country is pretty lucky.
Yes.
You know, being born in this time period, you could have been killed by, you know, tuberculosis, or you could have gotten the vapors and died, you know, 150 years ago. So, I mean, we're all lucky to that extent. And yeah, I met Jimmy Kimmel. That was lucky. But I went down to the radio station and waited in the lobby, not even for Jimmy, just waited in the lobby. Like, I called 1,000 times. They never called me back. I finally went down there. I couldn't get into the building because the building was locked. It was like a commercial building. They told me the building opened at, you know, 8 a.m. The next day, I got someone to cover my boxing class for me. And I went down there, and I got into the building. When I got into the building, I couldn't get into K-Rock, the radio station. I just got into the building. K-Rock was locked. And so I just sat by the elevator. And it was lucky that Jimmy came down the hall and not Michael, the maintenance man. That is, yeah, that is for sure. But Michael, the maintenance man, went on to do nothing. But if he was to host a major award show, it would be the BET Awards, just so your listeners can get a little idea of the folks that are participating in this boxing match. As a matter of fact, I wanted Michael, the maintenance man, because he seemed a little more athletic than Jimmy did at the time. But yeah, luck's a factor, but I try to tell people, don't even talk about it. Just go make your own.
No,
luck.
You have to be prepared for it. You have to be prepared for it when it happens, obviously. But every once in a while, a person does get lucky that the rewards of his labor result in something wonderful. They do.
I do. I think the rewards in your labor will just be the rewards in your labor. Like I never had lofty goals. I wanted to work on comedy because I believed that I had ability in comedy, and I didn't want to waste it any more than you'd want to waste having a physical gift or having a great ear for playing mm-hmm. a musical mm-hmm. instrument or something like that. So I could have happily gone on the rest of my life and never made a living in comedy. And I still think I would have just been doing it because I did it for free. I do a lot of it for free. Now, I think right now is a pretty good example.
Yeah.
I haven't been paid in the last 22 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you can jump off anytime you want. I'm just enjoying it.
No, me too. Yeah. I am as well.
All right. Go ahead.
Are you serious, though? Okay, well, no, go ahead.
I did want to ask you. I mean, I'm awed by your success in podcasting. I wondered, and I'm you know, who did I see the other day? Mike Francesa said he was going to go into podcasts, and he was going to reinvent podcasts. And I wondered, what he'd do? Would he do it in sign language? I mean, I don't know how one reinvents this. It seemed idiotically self-serving to me, but I love Francesa, so I'll go with it. But you do so great in it. The two podcasts that everybody talks about are yours and Pod Save America. And I'm wondering, is there a secret to it? Is there something that you do better than somebody else? How does it happen that way?
You know, I show up every single day and I do it. And I've done it every single day for over 8 years. I did it for free every single day for the first year. And I talk to a lot of people and they say, hey, I want to do podcasting. I'm interested in podcasting. I'm looking at reinventing podcasting. And I go, okay, good. You ready to go at it? And they go, yeah, I'm thinking like once a month. You know, and I go, once a month, that's not enough. And they go, okay, well, maybe like seven times a year or something like that. And I go, no, you got to do it. You got to do it every day or three times a week or something. You know, you have to be consistent. And they're like, that's too much. That's too much work. And so I go, okay, well, I'll just go count my money in back in my palatial estate because you don't want to do this. So for me, obviously, you have to have something to say. And you have to have a point of view. And, you know, I walk around all day with a little buck slips making notes of things I want to comment on and angles and views and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's just really about getting up and going to work every day. It's like any job.
I did a radio show for X amount of years. I stopped doing the radio show because I figured I might as well own my own rights and see what happens. I'm making money from PTI, so if I don't make any money, I don't make any money. And people said, well, how many days are you going to do this a week? And I said, well, five. And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, that's what I'm used to. I did a radio show. My podcast is more or less my radio show. It's what happened in the last 24 hours to me and to you. And that's how it works. Now, it's sports-based because I'd be crazy to run away from that because, I mean, people know me from that. But it's a daily show. Sometimes it's 4 days a week. And in the summer, I've always taken off. But you go to work. I don't understand even the concept of doing it sort of casually. I don't understand that. It's work.
I agree. And, you know, and then don't try to convince me that you just love, you know, art or love to talk or love this if you're not going to go at it every day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't look at it as a job. And the other thing I don't like is when people want to know in advance how it's going to turn out. Meaning if I said to you, hey, you can do it once a month, like you say, but you go at it every day and I guarantee you're going to make $5 million a year. Well, then everyone would go, oh, okay, fine. I'll go at it every day.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying to you is how about you go at it every day? And I have no idea if you'll ever get paid a penny. How about that? And you go, well, screw that. Well, now you will not be successful then.
No.
You have to literally go, I will go at it. I started 8.5 years ago. There was no model for revenue in podcasting, and I didn't go at it 3 days a week. I went at it 5 days a week, and I had to pay for bandwidth, which was expensive back then, and it literally cost me several thousand dollars a month to do a free podcast.
I get this. I walked away from 2 years on a radio contract. Here in my late 60s, I walked away from 2 years on a radio contract to do the podcast because I knew I would like it more, and I do. and I bought a restaurant, which is insane. I am now hemorrhaging money, which is totally stupid, and yet I like it. I like both things that I, and you, you, well, it, for me, it, I've always been somebody that went to work. I mean, I put on different clothes to go to work. I didn't want to work in my house. I wanted to go somewhere. I guess I learned that from my dad. I mean, that's pretty much what he did. He you know, took the train into the city every morning and assembled to see if they picked him because he was a dress cutter, which is not the most glamorous job in the world. It's hard labor, and he was unemployed a lot of the time. But from him, I learned this is what you do. You go to work. I assume you feel exactly the same way.
Yeah. Also, dress cutter sounds like a euphemism for when a chick lets a huge fart go.
That's a good note. That's a good
Brenda,
note.
I just... I just shot a dress cutter out. Oh, my God. Thank God I was alone in the car.
All right. All of this is designed. I'll get you out of here. All of this is designed to get you to publicize me so I can be as rich and famous as you. That's the only goal. I wish I could pay you. But I, you know, but I'm not. I'm not. But I will tell you how much I enjoyed meeting you and how much I appreciate the fact that you would spend enough time to do this. I mean, I like that. Thank you.
Listen, any friend of Shelby Coffee's a friend of mine, and I really appreciate you reading my book. I was really flattered that somebody with your intellectual prowess would enjoy my book.
I liked it a lot. I want to mention again, the website is nosafespaces.com. Is there anything you want to say on the way out?
Yeah, if anyone wants to read the books, I don't know if you read Not Taco Bell Material or if you read In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks or President Me or whatever book I wrote. I read a few books. Just go to AdamCarolla.com and listen to the podcast and look forward to all that stuff.
Adam, thank you so very, very much. I appreciate it. And the next time you see Simmons, say hi.
I will.
Wonderful.
So thanks, Tony.
Wonderful. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Adam Carolla, boys and girls. Doesn't get any better than that. He is the king of podcasts in America. And if I were to be the king, I would let him stay the king. We would have two kings. That's the way it works. Thanks for listening and stay alert for podcasts and pop-up podcasts. I'm Tony Kornheiser. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.